Interest rates are up and the market is tumultuous. And now more than ever, you need the best darn possible mortgage broker working on your behalf. That's Gabe Winslow, and you can reach him at 832-557-1095, or you can go to mortgagesbygabe.com. What makes Gabe so unique? Well, he's incredibly bright. He's a UT grad. He's got a law degree. He's been in the mortgage industry for over 20 years, and he is a true mortgage broker. What does that mean? It means he can shop for the best deal at over 80 different lenders and find you the terms that best suit you. Most mortgage guys you talk to won't reveal that they have exactly one size fits all for you and exactly one conduit to get your loan. If you are in these hyper-competitive markets and you're in these markets that have frankly gotten a lot less friendly to the consumer, you need the best possible person working on your behalf. That's Gabe Winslow. He has our full endorsement. You can reach him at 832-557-1095.
Welcome back. Yet another episode of Everyone Gets a Trophy post-game Bama React. We are taping this late Saturday night after a glorious 34-24 Texas win in Tuscaloosa. And this time I'm joined by a fan favorite and one of my favorites, Ian Boyd. Ian, when we started this Zoom, you had a big smile on your face. And I said, "Hey, you're in a good mood?" And you're like, "Yeah, I just ate cake." You're also, and then I said, "Are you excited at all about Texas winning?" And he was like, "Yeah, we won." Oh, okay. What defend yourself, Ian. Were you so confident in victory that this is just another W?
Well, by personality, I don't get super high or super low.
Good.
That's served me very well for the last decade of Texas football.
Yes, it has.
But it comes at a cost. When the highs come, I'm not. Although I was more expressive than my wife has seen me be in a long time when Ewers hit that first deep shot to Xavier Worthy.
Moonshot.
Yeah.
Did you
Bad.
say Dag Nabbit or curses or Jumpa Jehoshaphat? What did you
No, I did like some sort of guttural sound and
do?
like a fist pump kind of deal.
And your wife was like, "Oh, Ian, I haven't seen that side of you in a while."
Yeah. No, I went nuts when Ellinger led that late drive in 2017 against USC when he was a freshman, his first start or his second start. But then it was like erased like a minute later by what, a kick return or something. So,
It was erased by Texas football post
yeah,
2009.
not tonight.
No, not tonight. Look, I want to start this from the highest macro level because you and I tend to get down on the weeds. But where does this win rank for Texas in recent years?
I think it will prove to go down higher than the Notre Dame win of 2016 to open the year.
Really, Ian?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Remember that one when everyone thought,
I didn't think that.
yeah, that's good. That was a poorly played game.
Yeah.
This was not a poorly played game. Although Jalen Milroe is, clearly was in over his head a bit.
In some ways, he was.
But even I mean, he even made a couple plays where I was like, okay, I think I'm a believer in him long term. And
Yes, I am too.
I wasn't necessarily beforehand.
He
I
has a
love
gun.
this high school film, but yeah, I had forgotten how much poise that kid has.
Yeah. He made some really bad mistakes and he kept swinging, which is impressive.
Yes. And they had him rattled at one point. And then he
Yes.
stood in with pressure in his face and hit, albeit a wide open throw down the field, but still just.
By the way, Ian, I don't know if you noticed, because the announcers and the broadcast didn't do a lot of replay, but Jalen Milroe got hit
Yes.
repeatedly, very, Very hard. All clean shots, but brutal shots from Byron Murphy, Anthony Hill, Baron Sorrell. I mean, if that dude wasn't 6'2", 220 and jacked, he would have just been laying a lump on the field after a couple of those. So I think he showed a lot of poise. Obviously, he made some critical errors. He's got a gun. He's got a legitimate arm. He just can't get past read one sometimes. And we can revisit that. But I want to understand, beyond the Texas is back nonsense of 2016, where does this win rank over the last 10, 12, 15 years?
To me, that game goes up there with the Ohio State game in 2005. Now, I don't know that it can have, you know, these games, these wins can age like wine or like milk based on how the rest of the season goes. I think this season is going to go down. I think this win is going to go down in history for a long time, even if Texas is kind of, you know, meh the rest of the year, just because of what it meant for Alabama. Like, they're kind of in the record books no matter what, because I think they just handed Bama a loss on Alabama's way down, you know, and they broke all these records. At the very least, it's like, even if Alabama went on this unbelievable run, then it's going to be Alabama has not lost a non-conference game since
Texas in
2023. You know,
yeah.
More likely, I think the more likely scenario is actually that this is a Texas is on the ascendancy win, and also even Alabama might be on the way down.
So I'm less concerned about Alabama for obvious reasons, but I don't know if they're on the way down or what. I think their down may not be very far down. And also,
well, yeah,
we certainly want to pull for Bama this year. We want to become big Tide fans after this, because they create value for us and they give us a get out of jail free card, right? If they continue to win. So I do want to say, you mentioned 2005 Ohio State on the, you know, on the road in the shoe. I thought in terms of poise and taking a shot and responding, it felt like 2008 OU as well, where there was we won't think of it now because we won by 10 and dominated the fourth quarter, frankly. But there was a point when Bama did take the lead and they had it for a minute nine. But if you're honest with yourself, there was a point, or at least if honest with myself, there was a point at 109 where I go, man, we're leaving some big plays on the field that we need to hit. And I wonder if we're going to let this slip away and we're going to go back and think about that. And instead, Texas took back control of the game and then effectively put them to sleep. So
that was definitely
I love the poise that Texas showed. And by the way, Quinn Ewers' poise was quarters one through four. It never wavered.
That was definitely a concern. When it was happening, it was a concern. Yeah. When Alabama took the lead 16-13, it was a concern. But I still had the thought of, like, Texas keeps creating opportunities for themselves. Alabama is really going to have a high hit rate to beat them on their own big play opportunities, because they are not coming anywhere near as often as Texas, you know? Like, Texas mostly dominated this. This game could have been much more lopsided than it was.
Agree, and you know why? It just occurred to me, Ian, and it dovetails with your point. There was a durability to Texas's play and exploitation of Alabama on both sides of the ball. And what I mean by that is, we were accustomed to last year where Sark would come out with brilliant little tweaks and twists and little pet plays in the first half that Texas would ride to a lead, and then it would erode, and we'd sort of run out of our gimmickry and we'd have to rely on the regular playbook. And there wasn't much execution there. Yep. And it led to a frustrating season. In this game, Sark came out with some cool stuff, but it turns out the cool stuff is just our playbook. and our execution of it. Seriously, yeah. On both sides of the ball. Pete Kwiatkowski coached a whale of a game, just as much as Sark did. And I think there's a maturation in the program. And obviously, look, you just can't play really good football without a quarterback. And I think that's the guy we've been promised. And I think his execution, the offensive line's execution, the wide receiver core, Xavier Worthy was dominant in the first half, and they shut him out in the second half. And we diverted all of our attention to A.D. Mitchell, Jatavion Sanders, and Jordan Whittington. And they came up huge. And then we even finished the game off with 7 minutes left running the ball. And
yeah,
the third and seven call, gorgeous. That little run with all the motion and they spread everyone out and really convinced Bama we were throwing that ball. And that was beautiful. And then the constant pressing of our advantage, first and 10, play action. Just kept hitting it because Sark knows Saban teaches honest defense. And it's drilled into those guys. First and 10, you can't just sprint up the field, right? And they kept doing this little half-ass play fake. I mean, it wasn't fooling anyone, but it was creating a little bit of honesty and hesitation. And then Ewers was just throwing dimes.
Yeah, I was not shocked by Ewers' performance. He's been pretty good when he's been prepared, even last year when he had extra time to prepare, which, you know, they prepared extra for this game. He's been good. But there was a number of things that were clearly different in this game. Like, to your point, Sark being in his bag deep into the game, I think that's afforded by having an experienced quarterback and an offensive line. You don't have to spend all your practice time just getting a few things right.
Mm-hmm.
You can get reps a couple times on one play, move on to the next one, get reps on that, get reps. And they obviously have a much more expanded arsenal, right? Of like cleverly designed plays that individually are maybe not that hard to execute, but it's hard to execute such a large volume of crafted plays without guys that are veterans that can either have had time to learn them or have just gotten to a point where they can get them, pick them up really fast. And then, but the offensive line was night and day from last week.
Yes.
I was shocked on the live commentary that we did with Aaron Hogan. I was shocked when Bobby Burton noted that DJ Campbell had started the second half. Because Cole Hudson came in, I think, the second quarter and was outstanding. And then they went back to DJ Campbell. And DJ Campbell was good. And DJ Campbell was taking linebackers into the end zone on Jonathan Brooks' touchdown run.
So they both played in both halves. So Cole Hudson played quite a bit in the second half, actually.
Yeah. I'm shocked that they went back to Campbell just because of how good Hudson was. But they were both great. They both played good football.
They played really well. And I got to tell you, we changed some things up in protection. But the main thing that changed up was effort level, awareness. I do have a little bit of a hypothesis beyond the effort level and the protection, the protections we chose to run. I think our O-line is better against bigs than smalls. Like little guys running around and doing a bunch of games, I think that's more disruptive to us than big future NFL guys just pushing on us, you know, trying to get penetration.
So that doesn't necessarily bode like super well for the rest of the season.
Well, and let me interject this. That said, their base protections were different tonight and much better. And their execution of it. And that's scalable. So they really focused on inside out. And they assigned hesitation to the outside rushers through play action, through the constant jet sweeper or motion guy running through the formation. And the guy has to sort of look at him and say, what are they doing with him? And they just their whole thing was, Ewers, you need to stand in the pocket. Do not try to escape. Do not drift. If you don't see a hole to throw through, shuffle or take a step forward. But you are not to, like, move from where these offensive linemen think you're going to be. And they did a great job in the pocket. Bama had 8 pressures all night. Texas had 19. Bama had 0 sacks. Texas had 5.
That was one of my quick thoughts, was like, going into this game, well, going into the season, really, Texas's edges were like a question mark. Right? It's like, Is Texas going to be any good on the edges this season?
Yeah.
They didn't get anybody from the portal. Are they doomed? And then they played pretty well against Rice, but going into this game, you certainly would have thought Bama had the big advantage at that position.
Yep.
And I'm not entirely sure that the NFL draft is going to say that Alabama's better at edge than Texas right now.
Well, I'll say this. You and I were texting privately during the game, and Ethan Burke had a rough start on a couple of containment plays.
He got caught inside a couple times. Yeah.
And then Mr. Burke got cleaned up, and he blossomed. Baron Sorrell played well. Anthony Hill, I thought, was used like chef's kiss. Situationally perfect in every – like – so he ended up tied for 2nd in tackles for the game. I don't think he played more than 30 snaps.
I don't know what they're going to do next year if Sorrell comes back. And just in terms of, you know, with Colin Simmons and everyone, they have gone – they've just done a complete 180 at that position. When Sark arrived, for everybody, when Sark arrived – the only edge, quote unquote, on the roster was Jet Bush. And then the incoming class.
Ben Davis.
Which was what?
Well, the transfers, right?
Well, before they added the transfers.
Okay.
They had David Abiara incoming, who's now at SMU, and Baron Sorrell. So Jet Bush, Baron Sorrell, and David Abiar, and they may have added one of those guys themselves. I don't know if those were all Chris Ash recruits or not. And then they go to the portal and get
Ovi,
Rashawn Thornton, and Ovi and Ben Davis.
Yeah.
Now they have Sorrell has become a very good player. I think Burke is potentially a future NFL guy. Just the way is right.
Yeah. No shit.
Okay. Can you read your expression at first? I don't know how he's going to test, but his length and his overall fluidity and just, I don't know. He's very good. Anthony Hill is amazing off the edge. Like, everyone was like, is this like Micah Parsons? And I was like, guys, stop just comparing every exciting young player
to an amazing guy.
Whoever the best player in the NFL is. Stop it.
Right.
But
he has some qualities. Anthony Hill made a couple of mistakes. One of them was noted on the broadcast. He ran too deep. He got past the quarterback and allowed a Jalen Milroe first down run. Mm-hmm. That said, a couple of times he made little mistakes. And he covered ground so quickly that his mistake not only was irrelevant, it might have actually suckered Bama into like trying to exploit what he did, and then he ended up making a play. I mean, it's not just that he's fast. People always say, oh, he's fast. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's fast. He moves laterally so easily, and he just disengages from blocking. I mean, he was doing a great job on one play where Milroe's back there. It's in the 4th quarter. He's locked up on Proctor, who's every bit of 370, 360. And he's locked up on this big guy, but he's playing contain because he got chewed out on that last play. And he's seeing his opportunity, and he just discards that guy, sprints inside of him, and grabs Milroe before Milroe knows what happened. And Milroe, let's describe him as a plus athlete, right? It's just he's an unusual dude, and I'll just say I'm very excited about him. And we used him much better than LSU used Harold Perkins against Florida State. Let me just offer that as well. Holy cow.
I mean, I know we don't want to go on a tangent, but I'm not totally sure what you're supposed to do with Perkins. Hill is – it's very easy to use Hill because he's got such a knack for the angles of the game. Well, especially when he's in attack mode. When he has to actually play inside linebacker, it's a little trickier. But he has such a knack for the angles of the game when he's playing, you know, when he knows when he's in see ball hit ball mode, and then just the way that he deals with blocking is probably one of the more elite attributes about his play.
Yeah, we gotta call out the interior defensive line: Tavondre Sweat, Byron Murphy. I mentioned this to Randy. His box score says 2 tackles. His impact was constant, consistent, and fruitful in every quarter of the game. He did something where I said, whoa, and I'd stop and briefly rewind to see what Byron Murphy, how he got there. He was just terrific. And the box score is not going to reflect it. But if you guys get a chance on rewatch, watch number 90.
Here's where it's reflected. Alabama's running backs had 20 carries for 63 yards.
Yeah.
And you're right. A lot of that was Texas playing an undershifted front with Murphy the nose getting doubled.
Yep.
While they ran the ball on to the right side of their line behind, you know, the veteran deal of like Seth McLaughlin, Darian Dalcourt, who's a big guy, and then JC Latham, who's a really big guy.
Yeah.
And then often with a tight end outside that was a big guy. And they
did you see the play where Tavondre took on the double team, powered through it, threw the play side guard into the back? And then the back kind of bounced and like staggered, and then he got cleaned up by another player. I was just like, holy moly, that's a powerful guy. I mean, that's the guy we saw against Rice.
I didn't see that one in particular, no.
Oh my gosh. You'll see it on the rewatch. You'll know instantly what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I have a play in mind that I wonder if it was that where the running back had to bounce it outside for and was tackled for a loss because there was just nothing.
Hey, we were conjecturing during the game because he had an absence on a couple of series. Jalen Catalon, he returned to the game.
Yep.
So in his absence, Keaton Crawford played well. I think he blew a coverage.
Yeah.
But I thought he was like physical and aggressive, and he made some really good plays on special teams.
Yeah. So. I don't have great faith in Crawford in coverage. On anything that's like complicated.
Yeah. Zone. Or pass off.
We were debating on the live commentary, like should PK be bringing more pressure or not when Alabama kind of had it going with Milroe late in the second half. And I was like, look, a lot of times his first read is running free over the middle. Like there's not much you can do if you can't fix that to stop this guy. And I tend to put at least some of the blame for that on Crawford. But when they blitzed him effectively. When he is in like a simple assignment, his athleticism is very apparent.
Yeah. I just wanted to call that out because if anyone else noticed, Jalen Catalon had been absent for a while. He did return to the game.
Yeah, we were afraid he was hurt.
Yeah, we were afraid he was hurt. And then I got to call out Bama. Sark and Kwiatkowski are Texas outcoached and outplayed Alabama.
Yeah.
And hats off to them. I do have to say props to Tommy Rees on the play design where they got Jaron Thompson. They understood our coverage rules on that one. They brought Burton across the formation in motion, hit him on the run, and by our rules, which they did correctly, our corner takes the inside guy, right? And Burton gets knocked on Thompson. He got Thompson to turn, and it's 4-3 versus 4-6 at that point. And yeah. Milroe made a hell of a throw, by the way.
Yeah. One thing on that is that maybe Barron could have given him a little more help underneath. But Barron is eyes in the backfield.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons.
Yeah.
It just gives you a glimpse of what Milroe could become as he continues to develop. Because, boy, he throws a nice ball.
At least and he's got an arm.
His first read, he does. Yeah. Or second read, I don't know. But
well, I don't I don't want to turn an awesome, amazing Texas victory that's about as vindicating as anything that we've seen in some time into a Bama advice show. But there is a Milroe offense that they can run with more quarterback read, more quarterback optionality, and some simple one-read deep shots married to the easy kind of throws he can throw out. He's decent against zone. He'll kind of let it wing and put the ball in peril. But
yeah.
I think Bama needs to integrate more quarterback run game. Not necessarily the quarterback carrying it on power, but I mean option or zone read. Or
they ran some, but the thing is that Pete Kwiatkowski's 2-4-5.
Yeah, but they're not playing Pete Kwiatkowski anymore. That's what I'm saying, is if we Bama to succeed, Texas is the best defense they'll play, period. Anyone who disputes that, come at me. You're wrong. Texas has a really good defense that could be a great defense by the end of the year.
Yeah. Yeah.
They will not play a better defense, promise. LSU has personnel in a lot of spots. They don't have cornerbacks. Their cornerbacks suck.
I didn't want to believe you on that, and you have been very strongly vindicated on that.
Yeah, and honestly, I didn't want to be vindicated because I thought LSU was sort of a dark, like the dark SEC winner if they could find, if they could make Denver Harris behave. But they can't, and they're going to continue to get exploited at corner all year. And, sometimes the portal transfer from Southeast Louisiana State don't quite pan for you. So, I don't want to turn this into a Bama advice show, but we kind of are Bama fans now, whether we like it or not. And I would like them to fix that aspect of their offense because I think on defense, they should get better over time as those young guys figure stuff out. Texas took advantage of that secondary the way you and I thought they might be able to, but we weren't sure. They really turned those rules that Saban has against him, right, on several throws.
Yeah, I think I wrote that Texas needed to hit maybe three or four deep shots.
You nailed it.
They hit at least two.
Five? Yeah. Well, at least four. It depends how you define a deep shot.
Yeah, they hit a Mitchell's slot fade.
The 39-yarder.
They hit two touchdowns.
The moon ball at Worthy. There was another long ball.
They had a deep guy from the Xavier Worthy deep shot.
Yeah, well, so the intermediate throw to Sanders, the catch and run, that was a gorgeous ball, but I guess technically not a deep shot.
Yeah.
Ewers threw some balls.
He did. He had a great game.
So, look, that's the best Quinn Ewers has ever played in a Texas uniform. It's not even debatable, right?
That's going to go up there amongst the best Texas quarterback performances I've seen over the last 15 years for sure.
He didn't turn it over.
I'll have to watch it again. Does that surpass any and every Sam Ellinger performance?
It's hard because the victory is sort of the ultimate.
Right. Sam Merritt had some amazing efforts in losses.
I mean, he played his balls off against LSU and Joe Burrow, but he doesn't get any vindication because his defense is zero blitzed on 3rd and 17. So, I mean, it's hard to compare. In a winning effort against the opponent on the road, within that context, you got to go back to like some Colt McCoy type performances for something comparable.
And well, I can't tell you how the feeling I got when I realized that Texas had given up a touchdown on 3rd and 17 again.
Yeah.
And this time it had come when they had like dropped 8.
Yeah. It's funny.
I had even said on the live commentary, I was like, well, as long as they don't zero blitz 3rd and 17 again. And then I think they, I'd have to go back to check, but I think they literally gave up a touchdown and drop 8 coverage on 3rd and 17. Or they gave up a first down or something.
Well, Milroe got a first down on 3rd and 17 against zone. Milroe actually made a great throw, but it happens. You know, it's part of football. But what was interesting to me, a little thing probably you enjoyed when I saw it too, our guy Jet Bush coming off the edge took a Bama touchdown off the board when he got held.
Yeah.
Because he came so hard, the guy just had to tackle him. And Bama scored a touchdown on that play, and they called it back because Jet Bush drew that hold. You know, sometimes drawing a penalty is very valuable. And we saw that not only did A.D. Mitchell impact in the box score, 3 catches, 78 yards, he drew 2 PIs.
Yeah.
And those were smart PIs, by the way, because both of those were scores.
Yeah. How did you feel when Jalen Ford nearly picked off that pass in the end zone? And it fluttered, and then Alabama had a touchdown.
I was so pissed off.
It felt like Oklahoma scored a touchdown in 2008 or 2009, and I think it was 2008, where Texas made like a great play on the ball. They break up the pass. It like flutters in the air, goes out towards the sideline, and then this Oklahoma receiver just picked it up and then just like twinkle toes into the end. Do you remember this?
I feel like that happened with CeeDee Lamb too.
Oh, it did happen with CeeDee Lamb for sure. But it happened with like Iglesias or Broyles or one of those guys in 08 or 09 as well.
Yeah. Hey, F those guys. We just beat the crap out of Bama and Tuscaloosa. So let's talk more about that.
And it didn't count. So
that's right. I hate to be like it was a team effort guy, but it was a team effort. And both sides of the ball played great. Texas special teams,
great.
I think, effectively tied Bama because we did have a miss. Auburn had a miss against Bama, ironically. He missed from 42, but there was some good stuff that also happened in special teams. Keaton Crawford drew a hold as a gunner. Sanborn had a gorgeous 56-yard punt to pin him, and then we screwed it up. I think it was Whittington. I think he tackled a guy on the Bama punt rush.
Yeah, they were called for a hold, whatever it was.
Yeah, but point was special teams were not determinative in this game, right? I mean, it was sort of the offense and defense decided this game, not special teams.
I was concerned special teams might decide the game.
Yeah.
Because, Paul, if you were going to bet on any Alabama player having a 10-year NFL career, wouldn't you bet on it being their kicker? That guy was awesome.
He drilled it from 51. That literally was right down the middle.
He kicked an early one from 42 or 46, and I watched it, and I was like, this game needs to not come down to him, or it's a surefire L.
Hey, I don't want to completely deter from this, but there is a little sweetness to Schadenfreude when you're achieving your greatest victory. Texas Tech talks quite a bit, and they talked quite a bit after they beat Texas last year, and they talked quite a bit before the year. And they're 0-2, Ian. they had their back against the wall effort against Oregon. And by the way, Tech did play very hard, but Oregon won the game 38-30. So Joey McGuire and the Texas Tech Red Raiders are 0-2. Also,
you go ahead.
You love to point out Dylan Gabriel's deficiencies. Noted. Against the mighty SMU Mustang defense, Oklahoma won the game 28-11. So obviously their defense played pretty well.
Yeah.
But Dylan Gabriel was 19 of 27 for 176 yards and four touchdowns. But the four touchdowns were sort of, let's just say they were manufactured. Gabriel did not, the OU offense did not exactly distinguish itself in this game. So kind of interesting to keep an eye on that. And then
not only did they not distinguish themselves, but their offensive coordinator had Art Briles in an Oklahoma shirt on the field after the game.
Are you shitting me?
And their fans and media are going nuts.
They like in a good way or like, what are we doing kind of way?
What are we doing? They asked Lebby about it. And he was like, that's my father-in-law.
Yeah, Lebby can't do much about this.
That's the grandfather of my kids.
Right.
But apparently Brent Venable said that it had been dealt with. So like, I don't know, like happening again or something.
Like Lebby, don't do that anymore. Hey, yeah. The mighty Rice Owls, the team that we were irritated by last week. We were wondering, you know, can we block anyone? Can we do anything? Quinn Ewers, what's going on with that guy? What if he just needs to be more talkative? He needs to be more alpha. Remember those comments from the commenters? The Rice Owls beat Houston in the Battle of the Bayou, 43-41. JT Daniels threw for 401 yards, Ian. What do you think about that?
Good for Rice. My father's my father's alma mater.
Hey, good for Texas. Actually, not good for Texas. It's a wash. Rice and Houston, they're both on our schedule.
I think that's mostly a win, so long as they don't blow the Houston game.
We ain't blowing the Houston game, I can assure you.
Texas beat Alabama on the road. Okay. Texas A&M got beat pretty good.
I was saving that one for you.
SMU lost to Oklahoma. Baylor blew a winnable game against Utah. I think Utah is a much better team than Baylor. I think Baylor didn't look particularly good. But Utah had to play a walk-on quarterback for most of the game, who was pretty bad.
Yeah.
And so Baylor had a chance. They lost. Houston lost to Rice. Texas State and UTSA played each other, and UTSA barely won.
Yeah.
TCU lost. I don't know if they even played this week.
No, they beat Nicholls State.
Okay, they beat Nicholls State, but they really lost. Because for like three quarters, Nebraska showed how much more effectively they could defend Colorado.
Yeah, Nebraska was a better coached defense. Yeah. 100% for three quarters.
Although, I got to tell you about this. Did you see this thing I sent? This former Baylor player was like, man, I hope it's not going in Nebraska like it did year one. When Rule was coaching us. And then he said something like, we had like 13 concussions in the first week, which is not good.
No.
Alarming. Also, for those of us that vividly remember Charlie Brewer racking up, I don't know how many concussions that season at Baylor.
Too many.
And needing the officials to take him out of games. Yikes.
Yeah, no doubt.
But all that to say that Texas had a great night on a day when no one else in Texas could do anything to even approach steal. And for every other team in Texas, it was almost like like one of those Friday news dumps.
Yes.
Where like the White House is like, oh, by the way, unemployment is up 10%.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Hater Ian I don't get to see him very often because you're a pretty gracious person, but when he comes out, I enjoy Hater Ian. He's one of my favorite aspects of your personality. Yeah, so A&M Miami, I did watch a good bit of that game. And let's just say the Texas A&M defense has some coordination issues, and they missed Mike Elko. Holy moly.
I think they have some even bigger issues.
They've got – I mean, well, Jimbo – they've got cultural issues.
They have cultural issues.
I mean, dude, Miami, I'm here to tell you, I know you aren't going to believe it because Van Dyke threw for 5 touchdowns. Their receivers aren't that great. They're not that great. They're just like fine. And they ran all over. They ran through that secondary. Unreal.
How much time do they have too?
Yeah.
Like Alabama.
By the way, Miami played like crap. They got a punt
yeah,
blocked.
They gave away 14 points on special teams. And...
yeah, they got a punt blocked and they fumbled another punt and gave away 14 points. So,
although
they
also
didn't play well.
The lack of pressure that the best defensive line money can buy in College Station got on Miami was just remarkable. Like, how does that happen? It wasn't just that. Like, if the quarterback's first read is wide open when he hits the end of his drop, there's not a lot the defensive line can do other than completely dominate, which maybe you would think A&M could do based on recruiting rankings. But generally, that's not like a fair barometer. But Tyler Van Dyke was sitting back there for like 4, 5, 6 seconds routinely.
Yeah, there's some trouble in Aggieland. Oh well. Yeah. Too bad. Hey, I am really curious. Well, actually, I did want to mention something to you, which I thought was very encouraging. So in the immediate interview, did you hear Quinn Ewers?
I think so.
So they said, what does this mean for Texas? Blah blah blah. And he said, it means we won the game and we have 10 more. And we got a lot more work to do. And I was like, that's my boy. Like, there you go. And Sark said the same thing. He's like, it shows a benchmark of what we're capable of. I want this team to now understand how well they can play. And now we've got 10 more games. I was like, yes. Because the worst thing, like, the worst thing in the world would be for anyone to be like, we showed all the haters. Now we're on top of the – and it's like, oh, God. Like, this isn't the Super Bowl, guys. So even how they celebrated, they were excited. They won the game. People were fired up. They weren't like carrying on, right?
They talked their noise on social media a little bit.
Oh, they did. Well, good. That's what social media is for. That's what you use it for.
Justice Speakley. Recorded a video of himself on their field saying something like, SEC's not ready for us.
Oh, there you go. The Alabama and boy.
People caught Keelan Robinson on video going over to the Alabama's recruiting section and yelling at all the recruits that were there at the game, all y'all come to Texas. That's where it's at. Nothing crazy.
It's fun.
Just good fun stuff. I won't be shocked if they have a little bit of a letdown against Wyoming.
No!
Not a loss, just like maybe a little bit flat or something. But look, Big 12 championship or bust.
Yeah, man.
Win or lose against Alabama didn't even matter to that.
Mm-mm. No.
Big 12 championship or bust.
That's it. And what Bama, where it mattered is it showed these guys what they can do.
Yeah.
And they really needed to see, holy moly, we are this good. Like, if we play this hard and this together and this assignment sound, Ian, we had 4 penalties for 40 yards.
Yeah. Bam,
and you know what? And you know what? All of our penalties were well-earned. All of our penalties were aggression penalties. No motion penalties. No jitters penalties. No, we're on the road. It's scary penalties.
Yeah.
We were the more physical team. We were the better coach team. And we were at least as athletic. right? I mean, Bama's got good athletes. Let's be clear. Did you see the broadcast when they had them walking down the tunnel at the very beginning of the game?
Alabama?
Yeah.
I was scrambling with the kids. Probably not.
Okay. Well, I looked at them and I was like, okay. You know, that, okay. They look like Alabama. Yeah, I get it. You see their guys and how they're put together and size and all that stuff. And look, you know, the receivers are not as skilled or technical probably as ours, but those guys can fly. They can fly. Yeah. And that tight end, we had talked about Nyblack. Yeah. That guy can run as promised. I thought Jace McClellan played well. Particularly early, until we really got the grips on their standard running game. But look, man, that's about as fun and as exciting a win as I've seen in a long time. And you and I a little longer than you, but we've been slaving away at this, trying to entertain, inform, analyze for Texas fans. And
Paul, my first year at Barking Carnival was 2010.
Oh, there you go. There you go. So this feels nice for us as well. It's a little bit of a reward that, yes, we can coach guys up. Yes, we can develop. Yes, we can play. Yes, we can develop a quarterback. Yes, we can play clutch on the road in Tuscaloosa where no one else plays clutch.
God doesn't hate us.
God doesn't hate us. Apparently not. Yeah, the tests have ended, and now we can see that we have some ability to get to the promised land. All right, Ian, any final capping thoughts that we need to hit? I know we're going to have more that we have on the rewatch, but this is just our quick reaction. So if you guys are screaming, saying, why aren't you talking about this? Just realize we haven't had a rewatch yet.
I don't think so. I mean, there's a million things. We've talked maybe more about individual players and other teams than we have for the individual players for Texas. Do you want to give like a top five helmet sticker kind of?
I mean, beyond Quinn Ewers, I just think there's so many guys that played so well. I mean, Byron Murphy was – to me, amazing. Which offensive lineman do I pick? You know,
the tackles were definitely very good.
Yeah, I mean, Connor Williams played really. Oh my God, sorry.
Hayden Connor
played so much better. And I, you know, not dominant by any means. He looked much more engaged and into this game than he did against Rice. Christian Jones played really well. Kelvin Banks had one visible penalty, which, hey man, he's just trying to make a play. So, I mean, AD Mitchell was great. I grind my teeth when I have to watch him be physical or block. He had some brutal moments, but dude, they were scared of him. There's no question. Jatavion Sanders was terrific as a receiver. Benda but don't break. Yeah, Benda broke a little when they had the running back up the sideline on him, wide open.
I don't know if he understands the brand possibilities, because he had a sack where he got taken out and got back up and finished the play.
Yep.
His play this year is not really, he has two sacks on the season.
Yeah.
His play has not really exemplified the Benda don't break brand.
Yeah, he's more a havoc type guy. That's not Ben but don't break, right? That's
right.
He's feast or famine.
I think he can be good in coverage. But not, I mean, that he had a couple routes where he was in a tough spot. So I don't know.
David's got greedy eyes.
I think that's it.
Yeah. But you know what? He balled. He played his hardest for four quarters. Jalen Ford played well. I mean, I haven't even had a chance to look at the secondary because I haven't really had a good rewatch, but I think several of those guys played. Our corners played very well.
Okay.
Jadai Barron, his baiting on that early first quarter interception, sweet. Jaron Thompson made a nice play. I think he just got lost. I mean, Milroe just lost him. I don't think he saw him.
Yeah, they brought a safety blitz from the other side. And it's like, and it was one of those split field coverages deals where they bring Crawford off the boundary, but then to the field, they're still playing like quarters. And Jaron was bracketing the receiver. They just threw it inside, and Jaron was like, I'll take that.
Yep.
Ryan Watts.
He played great.
Ryan Watts had a big tackle on Milroe.
Yep.
Where he either was communicating with Hill, like, hey, you stay on that guy, I'll make the play. Or else he realized that Hill was lost and he just ran up and made the play. He had a big pass breakup on a otherwise open touchdown opportunity.
Would have been six.
Let's see here. He made defense. Where are you, Watts? He made four tackles. He made a tackle for loss and had a breakup. I don't even remember the tackle for loss. I think maybe he ran somebody out of bounds or something on a bounced run. I don't know. Great game. Oh, he had a corner blitz. He had a few corner blitzes. Jalen Milroe had a great game. Or sorry, Ryan Watts had a great game.
We're both getting – it's late. Sorry, it's late. Folks. I'm bringing up Connor Williams, and he's starting – in the NFL for the Dolphins, and Jalen Milroe just transferred to Texas. Dude, I'm just psyched. I'm fired up for this team, and I gotta say, I'm personally happy for Steve Sarkisian.
Yeah,
that's one of the most that's the most likable UT coach that I can remember, or at least just my kind of guy. And he's got to feel like $1 million right now.
Yeah. Good for Sark.
Good for Pete Kwiatkowski as well.
Oh, yeah. He was really up against it year one. Hey, good for Sark in maintaining his staff after year one and not saying, yeah, these guys are all bums. I'm going to toss them all.
You know, even if you don't think your guys are the elitist of the elite at every position or whatever, if you can create some continuity and growth and improvement, you know, coaches can improve as well. It's not just players. And I think Sark may have created an environment where a lot of guys grew a little. And he gave them the ability to do that and the patience.
Yeah.
And that's an impressive feat when you are the guy who gets all the bullets, when you're the guy who gets all the slings and arrows and the buck stops with you. Very easy to point the finger and blame or create scapegoats. And Sark's never done that. It's always we. It's always me. He does call people out appropriately, as he did with the offensive line. He gave it to Pete a little bit in the offseason. Hey, third and fourth down are unacceptable. We've got to change that. And guess what? We changed that. Bama was 5 of 14 on third down. So I've got to say, I'm very impressed with the character that Steve Sarkisian exhibited in not throwing out some sacrificial lambs.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, the credit overall goes to Sark. I will say one more for PK. Year one goes poorly. Allows not attention averse Gary Patterson to come in, install his coverage package for Texas, and was like, you're right. Yeah, this is great. We're going to use this. Takes it. Gary Patterson's rolling up and down the sidelines, getting all the credit when Texas defends Alabama well.
Tweeting. Remember?
Tweeting. No, it was a team effort.
A lot of you are calling and tweeting and congratulating me, but many people are saying that I'm the greatest thing to turn around Texas ever, but I just want to say it's a team effort.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd love Gary. PK is, he's like one of the ultimate, like, this probably originates somewhere else, but the old Golden State Warriors GM Bob Myers would say, like, it's amazing what can happen when no one cares about who gets the credit.
Yeah.
PK exemplifies that, I think. And he did at Washington as well before he came to Texas. So flowers for PK, but also ultimate credit. Sark is building an amazing program at Texas.
Yeah, I feel that way. I'm really excited for the season. I'm fired up to see what unfolds, because to see the team level up like that on both sides of the ball. I mean, look, we thoroughly outplayed and outcoached Alabama. And it wasn't perfect, and Texas left points on the field, and we can get to all that. The point is, they persevered. In the last 7 minutes of that game, Texas took the ball and finished the game with the ball in their hands in victory formation. With what, a minute 30 left?
I mean, they got the ball with like 7:30 on the clock.
Yeah. Something. And they ran it down.
Yeah.
That's something, man.
And they didn't have to run their quarterback to do it.
No, they didn't have to run their quarterback. I don't think you want to run yours a lot at that juncture, but yeah, I hear you, man. That was very gratifying. And I like that Texas can make mistakes and then they just come back and keep swinging. And Sark promised we weren't going to go in there and jab. We're going to throw haymakers.
Yep.
And Texas bit down on their mouthpiece and threw some haymakers. Took a couple of shots of their own, and then they kind of staggered and got off the stool and came right back in. So, yeah, props to Texas, props to Sark, props to PK, props to the position coaches, props to all the badass fans that traveled to Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, I think Alabama was a little surprised by the turnout.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I tell you, the road fans for Texas are awesome. They really are. And there's a couple of folks that sponsor my podcast who are there in Tuscaloosa. The first of which being Mr. Gabe Winslow, Mortgage King extraordinaire. He is probably very festive at the moment and enjoying this. But you can reach him at 832-557-1095. Hey, man, Texas won. It's time to go buy a house. Let's take all the money you just won in Vegas and go buy your house. Call Gabe, 832-557-1095. And then Laura Baker. She's also in Tuscaloosa enjoying the scene. And you can reach her if you're looking for a home in the Centex area. You can reach her at 512-784-0505. She's an award-winning top 10% realtor, member of Keller Williams and the Andy Allen team. Give her a call. And last but not least, David McClellan, multiple national championship swimmer at the University of Texas. I just texted him. Congratulations. And he is delighted. He's a guy that is as sharp as a tack. And if you get a chance, reach out to him, get a 30-minute free consultation and see if there's a good fit for him to help you with your money. His information will be included with a little ad at the end of this podcast. So Ian, anything you would like to shout out, my friend, maybe about America's war game? And by the way, I do have to tell you, Ian, I was listening to the Kelsey Brothers podcast. Are you familiar with this?
Yeah, I don't listen to it, but I'm familiar.
Okay, go listen to the podcast where they have on Alejandro Villanueva, the West Point graduate who started at tackle for the Steelers. He was also an Army Ranger and saw a bunch of combat. And he talks specifically about football being America's war game in that podcast. Yes. And when he talked about it, I was like, this is Ian's thesis, Alejandro. You guys should talk. So tell us where they can find that, Ian.
Yeah, hit me up, Alejandro. I'm sure he listens to this podcast.
So oh, but everyone listens to this podcast.
Yeah, everyone. Yeah, they got to get their trophy. Yeah, I have a Substack called America's War Game. I predicted there amongst, as well as at Inside Texas, that Texas would win this game. I thought Texas had a lot of favorable matchups in this game. I don't write as much about Texas there because I do it at Inside Texas, but everyone should check it out for the big picture theories on college football, you know, with strategy, a little bit of sociology in there. Yeah.
It's awesome,
it's
man. Like,
it's 112 at Michigan.
Right now. Ian's getting punchy. He's getting punchier than Alabama's defense after facing down Quinn Ewers. Hey, I do want to say, if you want to read us, go to Inside Texas. Yeah. It is the place for Longhorn coverage. And also beyond the coverage and like the multiple ways we dissect everything and own recruiting and post-game analysis and everything, it's fun. Dude, there's a lot of good people there. And I laugh every day in our forums, interacting with the range of really good people and complete lunatics who love Texas as much as we do. So join Inside Texas if you haven't done that. And let the folks that run it know that Paul and Ian sent you. All right, buddy. Ian,
if you're in Tuscaloosa, well, you're not going to listen to this. Never mind. Yes. Eric was tweeting out I don't even remember, like Wheelhouse Pub or something in Tuscaloosa, drinks on Inside Texas.
But Eric's already passed out.
No one's going to get this in time.
No one's going to get this, but Eric's already passed out. So he's already been thrown out probably. So, all right, Ian, unless you have anything else you want to say that's not relevant.
No, I'm wiped.
He's done. He's wiped. I'm going to let Ian go to bed. And I want to thank him for being gracious enough to jump on with me and talk trash and relish in this awesome victory like we all are, as the true diehard Orange Bloods that we are. So for Ian Boyd and Paul Wadlington, hook 'em. Are you worried that recent events have derailed your retirement plans? It certainly made us reassess all aspects of ours, and that's why we're proud to offer our listeners a chance to work with David McClellan, a fiduciary financial advisor from Forum Financial. David's practice specializes in financial life coaching and retirement planning, and right now he's offering free consultations for our listeners if you mention the podcast. As part of this consultation, David can help you understand your financial freedom number and what that means to you in assessing your future financial plans. If you want to build wealth, if you want to make optimal decisions within your financial life, David is someone you need to talk to. You can reach him at 312-933-8823. Once again, that's David McClellan at 312-933-8823. He's located in Austin, Texas, but he's got a nationwide clientele. Do yourself a favor and get some great financial advice for free and see if you might want to work with Mr. McClellan. I think you'll be happy with your phone call.